All right, let me switch gears a little bit. All right. So we did it. The most recent Cambridge City Council meeting was actually on in June 22nd. I think there was a roundtable meeting of the school committee. I don't usually follow those, but maybe I should, but or somebody should. But it was on June 22nd, and there were some things that took place there, one of which was actually them having to vote on a item that was made subject to the charter, right, having to do with some of the ShotSpotter question. Again, some efforts from councillors Flaherty and Simmons to inject a little reason into the discussion. But in addition to that, there were some other matters that came up, I think, of some significance. The current city manager has actually been talking for a couple of years now, at least, I think, about revising the way we do some of the ordinances and the way we do city boards and commissions. I mean, there have been some changes. They have some stipends for some board members. I thoroughly disagree with the need for stipends, by the way. There was also a very big controversial shakeup this past December, involving the Women's Commission and a few other boards, Human Rights Commission and whatever. I think perhaps partly in the spirit of streamlining and removing duplicate effort, duplication of effort. But I think that there's a sort of a general intention here from the city manager, and not just the city manager, but the city administration to revise how we do some of these boards and commissions. And I think that's long overdue. I mean, there are some boards and commissions that were created for a single purpose that simply never went out of existence. They just stopped having people on them. I've always believed we should have city boards, except for regulatory ones that must exist because of, things like Board of Zoning Appeals or Planning Board or Conservation Commission, which must exist. That typically, I think city boards and commissions, if they are somewhat discretionary, should by default sunset, go out of existence after, let's say, 10 years, 15 years or more, some period, unless they basically get re-upped. So in other words, saying, well, we have a belief that there's still value in having this committee, this commission, this board. So we'd like to be re-upped for another decade or another 2 decades, whatever. And otherwise just sort of pass into history, Anyway, there was a communication, I won't get into the details, from the city manager to the city council on what it was just called the Boards and Commission Ordinance Review and Modernization Initiative. So again, I'm not going to say what was all in there here, but I just think that the fact that we're even thinking about it, doing something about it, is it in itself something of some value. There was also a communication from the city manager, which is sort of making it official that the resident permit parking fee was going to be increased from $25 to $75, together with the provision that if you considered this $75 fee a hardship, that you could literally check the box and then pay, I think you pay nothing, right? That, by the way, this was all part of an effort, I think a very misguided effort from some of the city councilors to not only triple the fee, but also to eliminate the elderly exemption, because apparently they believe that everybody over a certain age is just a very, very wealthy white boomer, Well, I am, maybe. Okay, fine. But anyway, the city has promised that if you check the box, they're not going to like follow up and insist that you show your tax returns, so that if you really object to paying the $75, you just check the box, say I'm not going to pay it, right? Call it a hardship or call it a protest, but just check the box. There was another matter also relating to resident permit parking. A proposal that's being floated around, and apparently which has been at least provisionally put into place in Somerville, has to do with not granting resident permit stickers to new residents of certain, I guess we'd call it high density developments or whatever. So developments that are supposedly not providing on-site parking. Some of the councilors wanted to say, well, maybe they shouldn't be allowed to have on-street parking as an alternative. Now, I don't know. There's the old phrase, no whistle, no foul. So, in other words, unless somebody raises an issue and takes it to court, I suppose city council can pass the ordinance and without any review, it'll sort of be the law until somebody raises the issue. But as our previous city solicitor has repeatedly pointed out, ultimately, such a provision is prejudicial and basically puts new residents versus existing longer-term residents in a very different position. In other words, should I, as a long-term resident of Cambridge, be able to drive and park in East Cambridge at any resident permit spot? But somebody who lives in a new development, they should not have that right? I don't think that would withstand legal review. So I'm kind of with our previous city solicitor in the opinion that that's something that simply wouldn't fly. But there was a communication from the current city solicitor, via the city manager of the city council, saying, "Well, I suppose you could just do it, and see what happens." Again, together with the usual caution that maybe this won't fly. But it seems to be a new notion now that you should just enact new rules, even if you know ultimately they're going to get overturned, just because you want to. I don't think this is really a great way to be proceeding. There was another matter which was referred to, I think, the ordinance committee. There were some proposals to the short-term rental ordinance, the Airbnbs. So I remember when I guess Craig Kelly was on the council, there was a lot of, and his aide at the time was Will Durbin, who really did yeoman's work in, researching and addressing the matter of the pros and cons of short-term rentals. And we did pass an ordinance. But now some people want to change that ordinance. Now, maybe there should be some changes. I mean, there are some people buying up properties and apparently just running them like essentially as hotels, which is then removing apartments that could be rented in the usual fashion because they're just being operated as hotels. But there is a bit of an issue here. I think one of the proposals from two councillors, I think it's Nolan and Sabrina Wheeler, calls for putting a limitation on short-term rentals to no more than 90 days out of a calendar year. Now, let's be clear, there's different types of short-term rentals. There's the ones where I have an extra bedroom in my house, and there's other ones where basically I'm renting out a, I'm in a multifamily setting, I'm renting out an apartment because I own the building, I want to do that, but I'm not doing it with a longer-term lease, but just short-term rentals. Now, I don't know what's right or wrong in all of these things here, but if you pass an ordinance that says these are the rules, and then somebody arranges their life and their finances around income coming in to cover part of their mortgage or what have you from short-term rentals, and then some relatively few years later, you come and say, oh, and by the way, we're now going to limit how many days you can do this. That's kind of changing horses midstream for some people. And again, there may be some good reasons for this, but I think this is something that I would hope that these nine city councilors will think about very carefully because of the ramifications for some individuals who basically arrange their finances over the possibility of having such an income stream. By the way, I know people who've just basically been renting rooms out in their homes for decades. They're not advertising them, as short-term rentals through some Airbnb app or whatever. They just have done it because they kind of like having people whether it's visitors from other countries come through and whatever, and they've just been doing it forever. So are they going to be now limited to say, I'm sorry, you can't do that. You got to kick these people out. Or when somebody who stayed with you last summer wants to stay with you this summer, you're not allowed to because you've already used up your 90 days. We have a Cambridge City Council, which is extremely arbitrary and very limited in their capacity to actually do research and understand what it is they're passing. I mean, honestly, I think that's what they were doing when they were passing the affordable housing overlay. I think when they can't pass the cycling safety ordinance, I don't think they really thought any of this stuff through. Even some aspects of the multifamily housing ordinance that they passed last year, they didn't think through. And maybe they're doing some reconsideration now, at least a little bit. But who knows whether it's actually going to be politically possible for them to actually change things without alienating their bloody base. We'll see. We'll see. By the way, speaking of some of the things of which I just spoke, even though these were due a long, long time ago, now and are now a long, long overdue, ordinances such as our incentive zoning ordinance, which basically, just says if you're building new commercial development, you have to pay money, linkage fees. City Council revised that a few years ago, but it's supposed to be reviewed basically to see is this legally defensible to be actually charging certain fees, and never mind just legally, is it actually destroying good development, adding to the tax base or even destroying the capacity of building new housing because of the costs that you impose on people. Again, long overdue. We also have inclusionary zoning, again, first passed in 1998 and then revised somewhat 6 or 7 years ago. There was supposed to be a nexus study on that, and the city said, oops, forgot. Some have speculated that the reason why they oops forgot was that an actual study, an unbiased study, as opposed to a study done by a hand-picked consultant, might actually say that a flat 20% inclusionary requirement is actually responsible for destroying housing production in the city. And that maybe that 20%, which used to be 15% plus density bonus, as opposed to, so it was effectively closer to like 11.6 to 12%. They just flat jumped it up to 20, that maybe that was unwarranted and it actually just had some negative effects. Well, it'd be nice if we actually got a Nexus study came back and said that, the economics say the following. I am at the point right now, I've become so cynical that I wouldn't really trust a study that was commissioned by our newly dubbed housing department because I think they want certain outcomes. And I think the political people would be afraid to actually adjust that requirement from the current 20% to something more rational, even though cities around the country are already doing this because of the fact that these requirements really are stifling helpful construction of housing. All right. By the way, the notion when they did the pass the multifamily housing, they said, well, we're going to give you a certain, you can build up to 4 stories as of right, but you can go to 6 stories if you do inclusionary. Very few people are interested in doing the 6 stories if it requires them to have to basically hand over property to the city, unless they're already building so many units that they were going to be under the inclusionary zoning anyway, in which case, sure, let's go to 6 stories or 8 stories or whatever, But it'll be interesting if indeed we do get a Nexus study on inclusionary back in the fall, which is they said the spring, then it was the summer, and now it's the fall. If there is a study that actually says maybe we ought to be lowering that percentage, it'll be interesting to see whether we actually have elected officials who are capable of just following the economics and voting accordingly, or simply catering to their base again. Like I will never be on record as having voted to decrease inclusionary zoning requirements because I'm so pro housing. even if, in fact, the policy has led to no housing, so or no inclusionary housing. So, all right. So let me just move on to just a few other things here. So, by the way, as a kind of an alternative to the ShotSpotter discussion, Councillor Simmons and Flaherty did at least try to interject a call for finding some alternatives to that in those areas where that additional layer of police protection has now been removed by city council vote. So good for them. Whether anything comes of that, I don't know. I really don't know. I did mention about boards and commissions. So I think the press release was out today that the city council is looking for members on currently three city boards: immigrant rights and citizenship, police review and advisory board, and the LGBTQ plus commission. So if any of those three are of interest to you, the city is now seeking members for those. But just as a side note, one of the realities about being civically involved for as long as I have, I don't, when I first got here in 1978, I wasn't civically involved at all. But I don't know, maybe a few years later, 82 or something, like I sort of took an interest in proportional representation elections. And certainly in 1985, when I bought my three family house, I was advised to, try and get up to speed. And that's probably what got me started in being involved in civic affairs. You could say civic and political affairs, but politics was always sort of the seedier side of civics to me. I mean, to me, I've sort of defined my time here in Cambridge by serving on city boards and commissions, though I probably will never be allowed to do so again because of these particular city councilors who couldn't tell a good appointment from a bad appointment if they tried. But it has sort of been, civics has sort of defined me. That's why it's Cambridge Civic Journal. It's what I do, right? But one of the things about being involved is that you do get to know a lot of people over the years. Some people who are your friends, some people who are not your friends, or some people who are just sort of part of the fabric of civic life in Cambridge. So for example, Bob Letramoy, Ellie Yardin, Peter Valentine, right? These are people who, sort of were part of the fabric and who have recently passed away. Well, I guess this past week we actually lost another person, Vince Dixon. Now, I didn't always get along with Vince, by the way. In fact, we had a real shouting match one time up at a place in Harvard Square back, I think it was in 1994, which was a very long time ago. But I always respected Vince's interest in civic affairs and Cambridge history. Well, Vince passed away. Apparently, he had been sick this past year. He'd been living in Winchester, Massachusetts. I think somebody even said that he even drove a cab for a while, but then he managed to get himself elected to I think either the select board or town meeting or whatever. So he was carrying on his tradition as a civically involved person, well beyond Cambridge. Some of you may have known Vince from. He would always be, there was like the, not the key, the, I guess I always say the kiosk, but it was like an information booth in the middle of Harvard Square. And he was always willing to be one of the helpful people, helping direct people and explain history of Cambridge. And he had a very strong breadth of knowledge of Cambridge history, really did. So, and I would always see him for the last bunch of years at Steve Buckley's old time baseball game. So he'd always come back to Cambridge with his lady friend, Emily Ann, to see the baseball game. And we'd always say hi, so, but I guess not this year. So anyway, Vince is unfortunately no longer with us. So another matter I'm just going to mention here, not to dwell on it too much, is that unlike many years, and I may have talked about this last time we had one of these programs. This is one of the rather odd years in that there actually are some contested elections locally. We in Massachusetts, apparently the political party, it's all like Democratic Party only, right? And the usual rule is they don't like having contested primaries because the party insiders would like to decide for you who is to be your representative. And I think that there are long-term consequences of that practice. But anyway, for whatever reason, actually, I know the reason is that there are some people who are, quote, moving up or retiring, like Pat Jaylen was retiring from the state Senate in, I guess, that second Middlesex. And by her retirement, then there are five people who are seeking this, including people who are currently state representatives, right? I think Eric, I never get her name right, Eutter Hoven, Matt McLaughlin, I think, is a Somerville City Councilor. Burhan Azim, the ever aspiring, ambitious young Burhan Azim would like to be a state senator now. A fellow named Tom Hopcroft. So anyway, they're seeking that seat. But those who are vacating a seat on as state representatives, then, well, then no, some people are stepping in trying to fill those seats as well, right? But there are also some incumbents who are being challenged for reasons, good or bad reasons, what have you. So, for example, Will Brownsberger, who represents the Suffolk and Middlesex Senate, he used to be, I think, a House of Representative. He apparently rubbed Mayor Wu of Boston the wrong way in not going along with her plan to change the way they could do local property taxation. So apparently, Ms. Wu has sort of helped encourage a fellow named Daniel Lander, who has rather famous lineage, let's just leave it at that, locally. So they're both seeking now the seat for Suffolk and Middlesex Senate seat. So Daniel Lander is challenging Will Brownsberger. When in my representative district, my current representative, unfortunately, is a fellow named Mike Connolly, who I've never supported, and I don't have any particular use for him or his DSA pals. But he's being challenged by a fellow named Neil Miller, who is associated with the ABC group. So basically, poor old me has a choice. Should I vote for the DSA guy or the YIMBY guy? I'd rather vote for neither of them. Honestly, I would really like to have a good choice here. I'm tired of zealots who are people who've decided that they know it all. And I would just want to have somebody who's a representative. Quite honestly, kind of like Tim Toomey used to be when he was my state representative. But apparently, I will not have that choice. I basically have to choose between the socialist and the YIMBY. Great. I may blank that one. Probably the one that's been getting the most press is the 25th Middlesex District, which is Marjorie Decker being the incumbent versus Evan Mackay. Now, again, I'll make no bones about it. The fact that even if I've disagreed with Marjorie on many things over the years, is that she is eminently qualified to re for that position and should remain in that position. No doubt about it. And if anybody actually went to some of these debates and actually saw the two candidates perform, it's so clear that Marjorie is the substantive candidate and Mackay is this chimera, this vapor that is in there, basically with no record, still living in Harvard dorms. No accomplishment other than saying, oh, I helped form the Graduate Student Union at Harvard. Which is really sort of part of a national DSA initiative, basically, to use university graduate student and adjunct faculty as sort of a tool for, union organizing. So, anyway, I'm sure I've rubbed a person or two the wrong way in saying this, but I think Marjorie absolutely is the person who should be reelected to that position. That was true 2 years ago, and it's even more true today. So anyway, so those are some of the things that have been happening in and around Cambridge, and I will Let me just move a little bit away from the political now and just say that it has been interesting and actually kind of delightful to watch the effect of the World Cup competitions in Cambridge for the for the last month or whatever. And it's over now. The Spain beat Argentina. I don't follow soccer, by the way, so I had no dog in this hunt, But it's been really great for the businesses of Central Square, those with the TVs and those without the TVs, it's actually been fun, actually. It was especially fun when the people from Scotland were here all wearing their kilts. It was great. It was really a good thing. Another little thing that's been in the news, I find it quite interesting. Apparently, it's been first reported in Banker and Tradesman, was that rents in the greater Boston area have actually been dropping for every month for like over a year. Now, we're not talking about plummeting. We're just talking about shaving a little bit off the top of a already high rent, right? But people say, those who say, the secret of controlling rents is we have to build more supply. But another way to do it is you sort of affect the demand. And even though I'm no particular fan of Mr. Trump, the truth is that this hostility toward having postdocs and graduate students and programs here and just general hostility toward anything and everything has dissuaded a lot of people who would normally be sort of flooding into the area to sort of compete for the housing. So now there are many landlords, and it'll be very interesting to see what happens in August and September when people are sort of trying to sign leases and things like that, whether in fact this pattern continues or maybe even gets bigger. We'll see. But it is noteworthy. And maybe, I think it was Councillor Zuzi's call for a housing needs study, maybe is timely. We really should be taking a look at that. In fact, our housing department, if it was really worth its snuff, should be doing housing need studies continuously, as opposed to simply trying to replace privately owned housing with publicly owned housing, like it's going out of style. I think there's a meeting coming up soon on the social housing. Honestly, that's just another form of public housing. You might want to just look at the calendar just to sort of see if that's something of interest to you. But that's just primarily one of these sort of DSA initiatives to sort of socialize everything. So we'll see. And I think the last thing I'll say here is just to remind folks who don't know, my neighbor Larry Ward and others put together every year the Cambridge Jazz Festival. It's like the last weekend of July. And that's coming up this weekend. I believe it's, what is it, on the 25th and 26th or 24th, whatever it is, this coming Saturday, Sunday, up at Danahy Park. Start going noon to six each day. And it's free admission. Though if you want to, you can get a reserved little tent area. You can write a check and get a little extra benefit and a few drinks out of it, But it's always a good time. And I'm not the world's biggest jazz fan, but I have to tell you, I really appreciate having the Cambridge Jazz Festival, and I do go every single time. So anyway, as we used to say back in 1978, be there or be square. So anyway, on that note, I guess I'm going to call it a day here, and I'll see you soon on Cambridge Inside Out.